Robin Johnston here. Welcome to Into the Music on ABC Radio National, abc.net.au/rn. In 1994, the singers of the renowned American early music group Boston Camerata spent time with the Shakers of Sabbath Day Lake in Maine in the USA, a very small Protestant monastic community. There they found rare songs in manuscript, a living musical tradition, some fine hospitality, and the material to make a very successful recording, their CD called Simple Gifts. Since then, they've continued to work with the Shakers, returning to research, to sing and to record. Meanwhile, over in Helsinki, choreographer Tero Saarinen had long been fascinated by the Shakers and their functional aesthetic. In the second half of the program, we'll meet Tero and hear about his collaboration with the Camerata in a dance work on Shaker themes. First, we'll hear from the Camerata's artistic director, Anne Azema, a soprano much admired for her early music performance, particularly in medieval music, and Joel Cohen, a specialist in medieval, Renaissance and early American music, and now a music director emeritus of the Boston Camerata. I met Anne and Joel when they were in Perth last year, and we plunged into an intense conversation about the songs of the Shakers. What is this music? Where does it come from? And what does it offer us? Plenty, as it turns out.
The Shakers are an offshoot of Quakerism, English Quakerism, a somewhat more radical offshoot. What they share with the Quakers is the meeting where there's no clergy, where the spirit comes into each person, and the pacifism and nonviolence. The Shakers, they were called originally Shaking Quakers, in Manchester were known for their violent meetings of people being inspired and so on and so forth, and a radical approach to the relation of body and soul, because every Shaker is expected to be like a Catholic priest or nun and to be celibate. So every member of the church has to be celibate. They also believe that God is both male and female, and so they pray to the Father, Mother, God. And they believe that Christ has been reincarnated more than once, and one of the incarnations was Mother Anne Lee, who founded the sect. And this was so strange and so different from regular Christianity that they didn't feel comfortable in Manchester. And they came to the States, where they recruited quite a number of people. Besides the pacifism, they were for strict equality of the sexes, and against the Civil War, for instance, and totally against slavery. There are people of different races in the Shaker community. So in many ways, they were quite progressively radical ahead of their time, besides the theological aspects.
Here liberty reigns as the standard of union, and all are invited to gather around and share in the blessings prepared by heaven, for no other good like to it can be found. All kindreds, all colors, all nations, all people, no nation or sect are rejected at all, but all who are willing to give up their idols upon this fair Zion of God, they make all.
The musical material is similar to the DNA of English folk song, of Celtic melodies, of things that are sure in Australia, you know, and also in medieval music and Gregorian chant. So in terms of the sound, these pieces mainly were notated in the 19th century, but they often sound much older. They seem like they're out of time and space. There's a timelessness about the musical material.
What makes it timeless? What is it musically that makes it timeless?
I can get technical, but of course we use major scales and minor scales in our musical system, and most of the music you'll hear on the radios is in major scales. 98% of the pop tunes are. But we have basically two modes. And in the Shaker, there are three or four modes. They have different connotations. And there are also a number of tunes where our scales are do, re, mi, fa, sol, la, si, do. You know, we have seven notes. A lot of the Shaker tunes have five or six notes. So in that case, they might even recall Chinese music to you or Scottish and Irish music. So there are these different colors and characters to the tunes. They're hard to classify. And that's because they really are subtleties of expression that are there because of the way that the building material is used.
I also think that there may be something else, which is perhaps only with professional singers, but I doubt it very much, which is that singing monody a cappella with that instrument, the voices tend to tune to a certain system, which is very much akin to the acoustical system that the planets work with, in order to be very quick, you know.
So a natural overtone series that's in nature.
That's in nature. So
not on the piano.
I think that this, when you put a bunch of singers together and they sing without instruments, this happens naturally after 5-10 minutes. The fifths are pure, the thirds are a little bizarre, the fourths are not exactly what you'd expect on a piano. It's something that's received by the body physically in a different manner.
It's in your somatic system, yeah.
It is in your somatic. Your body vibrates differently when the fifths are pure than if they're not pure.
We're getting very new agey, but yeah.
No,
yeah,
right, I don't think it's new agey.
No,
I think it's scientific.
There's something in it. Yeah, you're right. You know.
Can we take a song then? Take a particular song.
How about Mother, the Protecting Chain?
Yeah.
With my blessing, I have blessed you, oh my children.
Why don't you sing it? It's a gap scale.
It's a gap scale. Da 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 da. There's a da 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 da. The leading tones I'm singing. Da 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 da. Dee 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 dee. Gap scale. Is that major? Is that minor?
What is the tone center?
Where's the tonal center? It doesn't correspond to anything you'd find in a harmony book. Bach couldn't have harmonized it. I remember giving some of this stuff to a well-known contemporary composer in America. He's saying, this stuff is so poor, you can't even write chords to it. How can anybody deal with it? It was for him, it was impoverished. And for me, that's the richness of it. It's out of anybody's system. There are these five notes, and you don't know where the center of gravity is completely. It's all over the place.
And can you tell me how the words work, or tell me how the tune perhaps helps us remember the words and move forward?
I think the fact that the tone center is unclear is very satisfactory for the ear, because the ear wants to come back and say, where is it? I don't recognize that. With my blessing, I have blessed you, oh my children. With my comfort, I have comforted you. Where is she going? Yay, with my love, I have loved you.
And then this Pentecostal bit comes in.
And then comes not only that, but different words.
Which is a
new note. Is she saying? She's introducing a new note and she's saying words that are not in English. So she knows something that I don't know as a listener. So you come back. With my union, I have joined you, all my children. With my power, with my courage, I've encouraged you. Yay, with my strength, I have strengthened you. Okay, she's come back. It's the same thing. But then, kahon, kahon, ladkari anaso. She definitely knows something I don't, because it's a refrain, but it's different words.
By the way, varying the words slightly like this with a structure is a technique of medieval poetry and balladry, which comes right down and into the Shakerism.
So you can make it last forever and ever.
Yeah.
In other terms, the listener is part of the singing, because you create a desire that you never fulfill, because you have that gap scale, tonal center unclear, words that you understand, some you don't. So some revelatory elements. That's beautiful.
So where does this come from?
Oh, well, they'll tell you that it comes from the heaven. You know, when we recorded that piece in their meeting house, Sister Frances Kempen said, you know, when you were doing that take, that Mother Anne was in the room. We knew, we felt her. She was there, you know.
It's 2 a.m.
Yes. But in fact, it comes from the inspiration of this community because there were no professional musicians in the community.
That's right.
And they simply found the two pieces. There's a wonderful manuscript there compiled by Elder Otis Sawyer, who's the elder of the community in the 1870s, 80s. And I was saying to one of the Shaker brothers, I said, Brother Arnold, I really think there's some, you know, Elder Otis, from that long of life of his, he wrote some wonderful tunes. He said, yeah, but the best ones were after he died. Well, according to their tradition, he appeared in a dream to a Shaker sister and dictated some melodies, mm-hmm. and they're considered to be his best work. I won't judge any of that stuff, but there is something about the, there is, without necessarily giving a supernatural explanation to it, yes, the communal, you'd say the wa in Japanese, you know, this gestalt means that a lot of people who had no musical training could write beautiful melodies.
The supernatural aspect aside,
yeah.
The people who were writing these melodies must have heard other music and been familiar with other music and must have come from somewhere musically. Have you thought about where that might be or how this might have happened?
In Manchester, in England, the sacred fire began, and whatever it goes on. Mm. It's on the Simple Gift CD. Yes, they came from Manchester.
It's an English ballad.
And they heard the English folk music of the 18th century, and that was their bread and butter. That was what was in their mindset. And because they lived apart from the rest of the world in America, and the Americans are buying harmoniums and, you know, learning how to sing Victorian hymns in four-part harmony and getting less and less interesting every decade. And the Shakers were writing these timeless melodies, you know, which are very, very strong.
Is there an English folk song that you can think of that when you hear it, you think, oh, that's such a strong source for a Shaker song?
Yeah, sure. Low, the girl I left behind me is a variant of that.
I'm lonesome since I crossed the hill. Valley, such heavy thoughts my heart do fill since parting with my Sally. I seek no more the fine and gay, for each but does remind me how swift the hours do pass away with the girl I left behind me.
There are other pieces where la 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 la. That's called Clamanda in the Sacred Harp. That's called Good Morning, Brother Pilgrim in some southern hymn books. So there are back and forths with those things. There's a couple that are. There's one, I Never Did Believe, which is very much like Go From My Window, a 16th century Elizabethan ballad.
Go from my window, my dear.
You can trace these things, but in fact, that's not even that important, because that's a lot that you can't trace anywhere. It's just that there is this sense of being out of time and space in a lot of the creativity.
Lord,
This is song as spiritual practice and as daily practice is kind of the source of the music. What effect does it have on you singing these songs?
If I get up in the morning and do my scales and I'm content with the way it sounds and that's the only thing that my day will be made of, then why? Why? If it's part of a larger community of musical elements, words, movement, the meaning of the piece, the people with me, the public, then it becomes interesting and meaningful. Otherwise, why? There are people who do it much better than me, you see what I'm saying? So it needs to fit in my own life and in a proposal that is right there at that moment.
So how do these Shaker songs fit in your own life, then?
They fit very well. They came in a perfect timing. They came at a point in my life where I'd worked on medieval music, which is monody, which is one line of music, most of the time, sometimes polyphony, several lines of music. But I had been really working a lot on monody in vernacular, that is non-Latin languages, a lot of it, trouvère and troubadour songs. Sometimes with one instrument accompanying, sometimes with a bunch of other singers. I was thinking, you were born in Europe, you are doing this, you live in the States. How do you relate what you do with who you are, with where you are, and so forth and so on? And the meeting with the Shakers and the discovery that there were thousands of melodies in English, in American, which were dormant.
In manuscripts. Preserved about 2.5 hour drive from our house.
Suddenly opened new vistas, thinking, okay, we're not simply looking at medieval sources and trying to find out how to pronounce this word or how to put this into lighting. We actually have put our fingers on something that's just a human way of doing things. How do you relate your voice to your spirituality? How do you relate your voice with words? What do they carry? In what language? Where do you live? And what does it mean to the people who listen to what you do? And what's the language that you can put together so that all involved, public and performers, can actually get a lesson out of it?
There's an experiential problem. Anytime you perform a repertoire that's not of your own time and place, which is why performances of pop music can be so easily convincing and very good, and they're wonderful professional entertainers in the business, and why sometimes one goes to a classical music concert and it'll be perfect and you say, why am I not moved? Because Schubert is not of our own time and place, Guillaume de Machaut is not, and even the Shakers are not. And then the whole problem for a performer who feels that this is important music, it's important art, even if it isn't the music of today, is how to bring it into the realm of shared experience and shared commonality. So we're lucky because the Shakers are physically close to us. We met them personally, and that gave us a big boost. But it's a problem we face anytime we do anything that's older than 10 minutes.
What it did to my singing is actually look at music in general in a different way in the light of what Joel just said. Macho is as important as a Shaker song,
yes,
or as Schubert.
Sure.
And it can mean some very important things for all of us nowadays, today. And it's a big mosaic, and it's like a Russian dolls, if you see what I mean. Every single doll needs to be there, and every single doll will change the way you will sing and will make you perhaps get closer to who you are, really.
So
our founder, Mother Ann, gave us the injunction, give your hands to work and your heart to God. For us, all physical work actually has a spiritual aspect to it, so that no matter what you do for a task, if you're doing it not for yourself, but rather for the community or for God, then you're really elevating it to a point of prayer. Be perfect even so as your Father in heaven is perfect, said Christ. And so that's our motivation to do everything as best as we possibly can.
Shaker brother Arnold Head on the phone from the Sabbath Day Lake Shaker community in Maine in the USA, where the early music group Boston Camerata have spent time to research, sing and record Shaker song. Robin Johnston here, this is Into the Music, and I'm in conversation with Joel Cohen and Anne Azema of the Camerata. We met last year when they were in Australia with a show called Borrowed Light, their collaboration with the Tero Saarinen Dance Company. Choreographer Tero Saarinen joins the conversation now. He's a major Finnish artist who'd long been interested in Shaker austerity and minimalism. The physical commitment and collective endeavour are compelling ideas for a dancer. He heard the Camerata's recordings of Shaker song and set out to create a work for his dancers and the Camerata's singers on stage together. The setting echoes the frugality of a Shaker meeting room, and the way the songs witness the sometimes anguished intensity of the dance makes for a strangely powerful theatrical experience. Tero Saarinen.
There is a community created with music and dance, and it has its own identity, even though it is heavily inspired by the Shaker sect.
There are eight dancers and eight singers, all dressed in black, and they interrelate with each other. And what you hear is the sound of the singer singing and the dancers' feet stamping on the floor and sometimes rhythmic clapping.
Yeah, I mean, they had a lot of this kind of improvisational dances, and they were ecstatic even, and they were accused for heretism or that because of those violent improvisational dances. And I think that aspect is very interesting because it's also kind of like touches the ritualistic essence of dance. You know, there is a bridge to the ancestral need to express yourself and connect with the bigger forces, with music and dance. And I think that has been the most powerful reason why I actually was so taken by the sect.
Very often you'll see a tarot's dance will comment on the shaker piece. But sometimes tarot's movement will challenge the music and say, wait a minute, something else is happening besides what you're saying.
Well, actually, it's clearly it is questioning the values of our time, you know, through concentrating into a community and what sacrifices a single person has to make so that those goals would be achieved and he or she wouldn't lose his identity. Or does he has to lose the identity or his own existence? But I wanted this piece to promote, you know, these communal values and also to raise these questions. It's about community, about devotion. Yeah.
Reflecting upon what Taro said, if you want to speak about the voice, and we have the same work that we do as singers regarding personalities and individual sound and how we blend or not blend on, or how personalities come out and don't come out. And it's a struggle and it's a beauty and it's a strength.
And you'll get a singer with enormous talent who'll do it for 6 months and say, I'm out of here, this isn't what I want, you know, because it means, an ensemble means, in some sense, not abandoning your individuality, but being able to abandon bits of it or parts of it for a whole. It's always a struggle.
And it's a very physical struggle and it's a very spiritual struggle. This is not a show for sissies.
At the very beginning, a woman dressed in black is on the stage. Her movements are expansive, big, but somehow contained. She's eventually joined by the other dancers. Then Anne steps forward.
I could tell you what it feels like to be on that stage at the very beginning. We are sort of dormant and not really involved. And this woman that you just described as a vision of sort, or is trying to tell us something. And little by little, we are involved in that vision, all of us, all in our own pace, in our own voice, in our own movement, in our own rhythm. That's what I feel at the very beginning.
There is this kind of, you know, premonition. We are waking into a kind of dream that becomes reality in a way. And she's really calling us on with her first song. She's calling us and waking up those thoughts. So,
of course, in the history of Shakerism, there was a woman who gathered all these people together. Her name was Mother Anne. And that's not the literal role that Anna Zema does in the show. These are not literal interpretations of Shaker history, but they're inspired by some of the poetic images.
In Yonder Valley is a wonderful song about the end of, in a way, that's the way I understand it, in the winter is past and spring appeareth, the end of searching, of being dormant, of being in pain, perhaps.
It's the imagery from the Song of Songs, very clear. It was written by Mother Anne Lee's brother, and it's the earliest Shaker song we have with the text.
Yeah. We've felt very strongly that this is the first piece. Yeah. First sung piece in broad light.
It's monody, one line of music. Within 10 minutes, you will have learned it. The words are simple. The melody is not very complicated. And then it comes back to the first segment, In Yonder Valley. and the repetition leads you to somewhere else. You say it once, you have a second statement, and then you come back to it. And when you come back, something has happened, which will make you repeat it yet again, because you will look for that modification. Your body, your soul, your voice will want, will thirst for that modification.
Let us arise and drink our fill.
When you sing those words, seemingly light and spring-like and so forth, you carry with them the struggle as well. And the repetition of the singing carries and transcends the struggle. And I think that is why singing was all over for Shaker life. You need that kind of, a little bit like Gregorian chant or other chants all over the planet. You have these things. The actual act of singing permits you to transcend the struggle.
Can you offer some insight into what that Shaker community would have been like when that song In Yonder Valley was written?
I think that song might have been sung anywhere, anytime, any moment of the day, while working in the fields, while working in the kitchen, or at gatherings, at the beginning or at the end of the day in the meeting house. I think that's the beauty of all these Shaker songs, is that their monastic life, if you want, or their church life or their community life is infused with singing. There is no borderline between this is worship, this is work, this is being outside in the world, and everything is the same, and the singing voice carries all of that.
I also would say that In Yonder Valley it reflects the real-life Shaker's love of the outdoors and of nature and of green things and of sunlight. And the other thing that's a metaphor in the In Yonder Valley is that the new valley is America, because the Shakers came to America to escape religious persecution. Once again, these are particularities. Tero's vision is much more universal and in some ways, quote-unquote, European. Tero has a dream of a monastic community, which is reflects many different kinds of religious experiences, yes. But it's clear also that there are powerful things in the Shaker creed, which inspired Tero to do his job. He made it possible for the singers and the dancers to feel like a community, and then they went for it and did it.
And the first rehearsals we did in Helsinki, I was so happy because Tero never told me, hold yourself this way and put your shoulders back, and he simply said, well, why don't you sing? Well, do you want me to do this way or that way? Well, just sing. And we did. And yeah. it's a tribute to his talent and to the music and the dance together as well as a production, to be able to say, I was never told what to do, and I have a feeling that I dance when I am in this show. The same way that I feel that the dancers sing with us. Because when we sing all together and they move, the tempis are affected. The breath is affected.
Yeah, there's a slight variation in tempo sometimes from night to night. It's inevitable. And then the dancing changes.
Yeah,
I watch that happen.
Yeah,
it's
true.
It's organic.
It's very organic.
And that's why you should never use pre-recorded CDs or tapes
exactly.
In a dance show. Because there's a human element when the singers and the players are actually relating to you. It's fabulously good.
The eight singers move among the eight dancers. In the piece, what does it do to your singing that you move?
It does wonderful things. To be able to move with your body, you have to be able to move with your singing. If you hold your singing like a encaged bird for the sake of its own beauty only or anything like this, you cannot move. It will show on stage that you cannot move if you hold this. So it's an exercise in letting go, in just being in the community, with the public, by the way, which becomes part of the community as well.
Do you listen to your own beauty while you're doing it? And
sure, hope not.
Hope not. Oh.
I would rather go to the beach.
I'm always mesmerized in the ending, the solo of Anne, that actually one doesn't think so often, but she has to climb very, very big stairs at the same time, produce this angelic voice and kind of ethereal, kind of transcendental you know, vision. And, you know, many people don't think that these physical obstacles that are always there in a way in the piece, you know, like for the singers, it's not easy.
It's part of the trip, as they say in the States, you know. It's part of the thing, is that nothing is easy.
Yeah.
Nothing is easy. And that's, it's good. If it were easy, I think it wouldn't mean the same thing.
I think the issue of narcissism in performance transcends this particular production. I think the performances you hear, whether it's medieval music or opera or great stage actor, they're the people who are not who are channeling something that isn't just themselves.
They had, you know, in their dances, it's all in the manuscripts, that they had stomping and whirling and clapping and all those elements I wanted to integrate into the piece as well, and but also to mix it with my own style. And I think we succeeded, and then I have to thank for the Shakers for those ideas. But on the other hand, I think those ideas, whirling and stomping and clapping and even body percussion sounds and all these ones have been used throughout the worshipping man in pagan rituals too, you know, and so there's something essential.
Yeah, and I think that is the continuity for this particular production gives it a strength, because the simplicity of Shaker Song or Shaker Furniture is somehow echoed in the fact that we've reduced the parameters of the staging and the lighting to some very essential things. In that sense, it's in the line of Shakerism. You
know? Yeah, I mean, form for function really came from them, the slogan. And I think that there is really the philosophy for this beauty. It's not just for the beauty's sake, but it was done for things to be practical and useful and somehow close to the belief. So that's why I think it's more deeper than just mere minimalism.
I will quote Sister Frances, who lives in Sabbath Day Lake, and says, there's one thing I would not like to be is like considered as a Shaker chair. I am a human being, and whatever beauty you find in our own objects just reflect our tending and our spiritual aim. But it's true that there is a lot of beautiful Shaker furniture that were done by the brothers and sisters, that their buildings are wonderfully simple and gorgeous in their elegance.
Very influential in history of modern design.
'Tis the gift to be simple, 'tis the gift to be free, 'tis the gift to come down where we ought to be. And when we find ourselves in the place just right, 'twill be in the valley of love and delight.
'Tis the gift to be simple, 'tis the gift to be free, 'tis the gift to come down where we ought to be. And when we find ourselves in the place just right, 'twill be in the valley of love and delight. When true simplicity is gained, to bow and to bend we shan't be ashamed. To turn, 'twill be a delight, till by turning we come round right. When true simplicity is gained, to bow and to bend we shan't be ashamed. To turn, 'twill be a delight, till by turning we come round right.
You know, for us dancers, you know, this music of the Shakers, it really stays in our mind. And in the lyrics and you know, even the simple gifts, the gift to be simple, all those, the words, they stay in our minds, you know, and thoughts for months. Because it's such essential thoughts and words. You cannot forget them. And there is something, they are cleverly built because there is a kind of brainwash going on because they really stay in your mind, you know. You cannot get rid of them.
These little simple melodies, they are two phrases long and they take up a page of music. And as I said to Sister Frances, I said, you know, they look so straight, simple, but there's a lot in them. And her eyes glittered and then she invited me to lunch. You know, it's okay, you're getting the point. That's it.
Fall on the rock and be broken. Lord, for my holy word is spoken. Lord, fall on the rock and be broken. Lord, for my holy word is spoken. Lord, beneath the raging billows, Lord,
So we're sitting in the chapel, in the main Shaker dwelling, and we've finished recording a lot of songs, some of them songs that were already known to the community, and some that we transcribed recently from the manuscripts across the street. Everything is beautiful. But what I want to concentrate on now, on this little talk, are the songs you knew before we started the recording, and learn a little more about their history and where they came from. And to begin with, I wonder if you could tell me a little bit about that beautiful song, Fall on the Rock and Be Ye Broken.
Mm-hmm. Well, I believe we learned it from Sister Mildred. Not a song that we ever sang a whole lot of before the last 20 years, would you say?
Uh-huh.
I, as a young person, I didn't know it.
Ah, but Sister Mildred knew it.
Yeah, uh-huh.
So, and she gave it to you.
Mm-hmm.
And
sang
it to you. And there are a lot of songs with this theme of being broken and being humble. Mm-hmm. Can you tell me about that, the meaning of those in Shaker thought and Shaker theology?
It's very definitely a humility song.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
about stripping away pride and, mm-hmm. you know.
Well, smashing. Yeah. I mean, it's more than stripping because, you know, you're falling on a rock. You're being broken. You're not being killed, you're not being injured, but your pride's being destroyed.
I think some of the most beautiful Shaker songs have that theme.
It is truly a part of obtaining that humility that is so important to Shaker life.
Another humility song that I really love is the Low, Low, This Pretty Path. It's a profound one. Associated with that? Is there a...
We always sing it during this Christmas season because of Mother Anne's admonition to sweep clean.
It's an Advent song
yes,
or a Christmas song?
Yes. Shakers have the obligation to clean out of their hearts during that season anything that has kept them from a full relationship with God. And that sweeping, it was not entirely the porch sweeping that she was concerned with. It was to sweep out the heart as well. It's very special to us, isn't it?
The way the Camerata learned it first was we had a transcription of it from a manuscript, and then we listened to you sing it, and there were a few small differences. But what astonished me was that you've kept it in the tradition without music writing,
mm-hmm.
As it was 150 years ago, basically, with only the smallest changes. That means that people learn songs very carefully. Is that?
Yeah, Sister Mildred was, I don't think adamant is too strong a word about us singing songs correctly and keeping, you know, the tempo going correctly and stuff like that. And she, you know, loved to have us learn new songs, but she wanted us to do them properly.
Do them the right way.
I actually like the way we sang it with you directing it. I like that quickening part to it. I love the pieces that we are doing that you have brought back from over 100 years. What a shame that it's been all of this time and we haven't sung them, and how wonderful that we are now learning them and we will sing them.
Well, if you know.
Oh, and that was a special era.
It's a wonderful era, and there's riches for you and for me and for the rest of the world, too. So we'll keep on transcribing.
Thank you for
okay.
finding those songs.
Thank you, Shaker friends. We've seen a change. Unfortunately, there are only 3 Shakers remaining now. It's always been a small community in this century. But they keep the Shaker order. They still invoke the spirit of Mother Anne in their meeting, which is very much like a Quaker meeting. It's people sit and wait for the spirit to move them. They're in many ways like the people you see on the stage. In many ways, they're different.
The Shakers we know are smiling and relaxed and seem quite at peace with themselves. And they love a glass of wine and they like a good joke and they go to classical music concerts.
What is the place of these Shaker melodies in American music broadly? Where do they belong?
I think they belong, this from a European, I'm not American. I think they belong to the repertoire of American music and they belong without belonging. In other terms, a couple of melodies have made it. Everybody knows Simple Gifts, Aaron Copland. But in fact, they still are not very sung much. And there's been a wonderful edition by Daniel Patterson of a lot of them. But there's still thousands of their sleeping.
Can you talk about some of the American pieces which have used Shaker song and, you know, successfully or otherwise?
You know, I this is a little bit my dada, which is that our mass culture, which has 35,000 channels on all the time, sometimes doesn't have anything on. Let me give you an example, which is totally removed from Shakerism. You know, I have thank goodness, the most wonderful thing I carry in my wallet is a year pass to the Louvre. And so I go to the Louvre when I can, you know, if I'm in Paris, and I walk past the Mona Lisa, and there are 30,000 people snapping it with their cell phones. And then I walk into another room with their cell phones. And then I walk into another room, which may have Etruscan art or other Renaissance Italian art or Middle Eastern art or Romanesque sculpture, and I'll be by myself. I'm thinking, why the heck are they all, I mean, I have nothing against the Mona Lisa. I have nothing against Simple Gifts. It happens to be a magnificent tune. But it is by no means the only important or beautiful or magnificent Shaker song. And I think it's very interesting that this repertoire, which is on the margins of the American public consciousness, is so deeply American, so representative of this. I mean, you feel this yearning. I'm looking at the political campaign in America, and people are yearning for something that represents their better self. And there are these... You can see the people on their faces as they go to certain political rallies and saying, yes, please bring us back to who we really are. And Shaker music is that. It's a part of the best of America. And so, yeah, well, if we can make it more into the public consciousness and less out on the margins, that's great. I don't know where the internet is taking us in the digital age. You know, perhaps there are more individual choices now. But I would like to see an America that's less uniform. You know, less built around three celebrities and four received ideas. It's not simply an American issue.
And one car commercial with Simple Gifts.
Yeah, and a car commercial with Simple Gifts, you know. And maybe we can work towards that. And, of course, the thing that the Boston Camerata does and the thing that Terrace Company does is to create alternate possibilities within the human mind, you know, so that we don't all have to watch the same show and think the same thing. There are other channels besides the ones that you get on cable.
And unique musical performance. Mr. Itzhak Perlman, violinist. Anthony McGill, clarinet, violinist. Anthony McGill, clarinetist. Yo-Yo Ma, cellist. And Gabriella Montero, pianist, performing Air and Simple Gifts, a composition of Williams.
Sounds from the inauguration ceremony for Barack Obama. The composer commissioned for the occasion, the great movie composer John Williams of Star Wars fame, chose to offer his arrangement of a Shaker melody. That Shaker melody, even though as we know now he had thousands of others to choose from. But it was Simple Gifts, composed by Elder Joseph Brackett in the 1840s, famously arranged by Sidney Carter as Lord of the Dance, by Aaron Copland in his Appalachian Spring, and now by John Williams for the inauguration. On today's edition of Into the Music, we met a couple of authorities on Shaker song, Joel Cohen, who since 1968 has been director of the early music group Boston Camerata, now music director emeritus, and French soprano Anne Azema, a wonderful singer, insightful scholar and longtime member of the Camerata, who late last year assumed the role of artistic director.
We also met Finnish choreographer Tero Saarinen of the Tero Saarinen Company, whose compelling dance work on Shaker themes, Borrowed Light, a collaboration with the Boston Camerata with musical direction by Joel Cohen, was seen at the Perth International Arts Festival last year. Online, you can listen again, read a transcript, find details of the music you heard, or send us an email to let us know what you think. This edition of Into the Music was produced by myself, Robin Johnston, and sound engineer David LeMay. The interview was recorded by Ian Manning. Thanks also to Gary Bryson, whose excellent Encounter program on Shaker theology is also available online. You'll find a link from our site, so check it out, abc.net.au/rn/intothemusic.